Good morning. Happy Sabbath, everybody. You guys awake?
Yes.
Whew. I sound like Kermit, don't I, this morning? So luckily, you don't have to hear me speak the entire time today. But welcome to OC Grace. This is our first service of the day. And we've been moving through this series. This is our second part of this series called Our Stories. And this has been really pretty exciting for me because I get to talk to you. And I've seen a couple people, they'll be sharing their story and they'll stop and they'll be like, wait. You're not going to ask me to tell this, are you? I'm like, well, maybe. But here's the thing. I've sat through so many people's testimonies and so many stories. And just like you, when I hear the stories, other people's stories, I think, man, my stories are lame. I never had an angel step down and speak to me. I never had this giant, miraculous moment like so many other people seem to in their stories. And for my whole life, I remember growing up thinking, I need better stories. But then I started to realize my stories, my tiny little funny stories that happen to me daily, those are the stories. Those are actually the stories that bring change and movement and growth. It's the tiny ones, isn't it? It's the little subtleties that bring that change. And so those are the stories we should be telling. We don't have to wait for the big angel moment where God steps in and says, wah, and whatever the message is. The tiny moments, the small stories, those are the ones that are dying to be told. And so today, our theme is hot and spicy, sweet and sour. And so if you've ever, how many of you have ever eaten at a Chinese restaurant?
Yeah.
It's good, right? Yeah, Kung Pao chicken. It's delicious. And the tofu one is not terrible either. But in Chinese cuisine, all of the different foods, they have different meanings. And so when you eat an egg, there's this idea among the Chinese that when you eat the egg, it's actually a sign that there is a new life to come. And so they'll often eat the egg as a reminder that at some point in time, this couple is going to have a baby, and they'll often have the egg during that time period. Another thing that they'll do, noodles. How many of you have ever had noodles? Chinese noodles, they're delicious. Noodles are representative of long life. And so fish is also a sign of we've been prospering. So you get a new job, you would have a large plate of fish. It all fits. And then there are sour and bitter and tangy and all of these things. These are representatives of life that we have. And after you eat it, you know there's always the fruit dessert at the end. And so today we're going to share some hot and spicy, sweet and sour stories. And our first presenter is Steve Rivera. He's going to share a story about hot and spicy. Give him a hand.
About hot and spicy food. So I have a friend, we'll just call him Silvino. You may or may not know him. We love food. We love to cook food, we love to eat food, and we love to do food challenges. One day I come across this challenge of the world's hottest taco. Come on, I've eaten a lot of tacos in my life, and none of them have been the world's hottest taco. So anyways, we say, all right, let's make a day of it. We go down there, we take our families, and we get to this place, world's hottest taco, right? And we look at the name of the place, Genkiyaki. Well, it doesn't seem like a very taco-ish place, right? It's a Japanese name. All right, Japanese place, this has got to be sign number one that I should just be turning around and walking out. Japanese restaurant that's serving the world's hottest taco. Whatever. So we go inside and we look around. Oh, pretty nice place. Sure enough, we see the board with the world's hottest taco advertised. And they have different levels, right? The death taco, the murder taco, the zombie taco, I don't know. Oh, we're in the right place. Then we go to order. And before me, I see Chinese food. I'm like, okay, sign number two. Japanese restaurant serving, making Chinese food, but serving the world's hottest taco. All right, we'll try it anyways. We go up, we order our family's food, whatever, Kung Pao chicken and, you know, chow mein and all that good stuff. And then Silvino and I say, wow, the zombie taco. Cashier looks at us like, have you ever had it before? No, but that's what we're here for. We'll have the zombie taco. We really suggest you start with the death taco and work your way up. Nah, we came here for the zombie taco. I know it's a gimmick. Just give us the zombie. We really want you to try. Okay, give us the death taco. We order the death taco. And I said, but wait a minute, there's got to be Mexicans around here, right? Making a taco. I don't know. Do Japanese know how to make tacos? Sure enough, look to the back, the whole staff, Mexican. Sign number three, right? That's sign number three. Japanese restaurant that serves Chinese food, making the world's hottest taco by Mexicans, right? Then the owner comes out and says, oh, I hear you want to try the zombie taco, Korean owner. I'm like, okay. Sign number four, I should have just headed for the door. So anyways, they give us the death taco to start off, and we go to our table, and we start eating together, and Silvino immediately starts to choke. And for time's sake, we'll just say that he swallowed it down the wrong way, right? So my wife asked me, well, how is it? Silvino's choking over there. I'm like, it's like a spicy barbecue sauce, whatever. World's hottest taco, okay. I go back and order the zombie taco, and again, he gives me the same thing. Are you sure? How did you do with the death taco? And here's my second mistake. Spicy barbecue sauce is what it tasted like. Pulls out a paper. Bam! Sign right here. What am I signing? Well, you know, people have gone to the ER and whatever, and pretty much I'm signing that if I die because of this taco, they're not liable. I sign it as part of their gimmick, right? I'm like, yeah, okay, we've done a lot of these challenges before. I've seen that form a million times. And he said, I'll bring it out to you. I'm like, wait a minute, you just handed me the other one. What do you got to bring this one out for? It's probably part of their gimmick. So he brings me and sets before me the most blood red, crazy looking taco you've ever seen. But it's a small taco, the kind that you get from the lunch truck. I'm like, all right, I'll do this in one bite. But in his other hand, he had a bucket. And as he walked up to my table, everybody in the restaurant's head is looking at me now. I'm like, well, okay, maybe they're in on it. It's one of those hidden camera shows or something. All right, I get it, dude. Just put that bucket over there. I won't be needing that. I start to eat this zombie taco, and even Silvino's looking at me like, My wife says, how is it? After I have two bites in, I'm like, well, yeah, it's just like the other one. At this point, it just kicked in. I mean, terror from 0 to 100 in those 2 seconds right there, from spicy barbecue sauce to the worst thing you ever, I will say survived because I'm here, so survived in your life. I immediately go into a panic, but I'm trying to look cool because Silvino's looking at me like, so I'm like, eating it fast. I finish it, but you know, when you eat a taco, if you're eating a taco, some stuff falls out. So I get it. That's the deal. You got to finish the whole thing. So then I pick it up to put it in my mouth, and my stomach just goes, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I try again. By this time, the server, he's back at my table looking at me like, you can't get it in, can you? I'm like, nah. He goes, yeah, that's your body rejecting it. It thinks it's a poison, so it doesn't want you to put it on my hand. After about 2 more tries, I gave up right there, and I just start drinking my Coke, and my wife's like, here, eat my orange. Yeah, acid, that's a great idea. Here's that acid. And then she looks at me, you're so stupid. I'm like, why? What are you talking about? She takes a picture. I'm just white as a ghost. And she's like, man, I can't believe you. So my whole life up until this point, I've had acid reflux like you wouldn't believe, 24 hours a day, every day. What are you doing eating spicy food? I can't believe, look at your hands. What's wrong with my hands? My hands are shaking. I'm like breathing like. So we leave, you know, I can't do it. We leave, and I tell my wife, every time we go somewhere, my wife and I in the car at the same time, I drive. But this time I'm like, here, drive. And she's like, so stupid. So I said, oh, but we're supposed to go eat dessert with them somewhere. I'm like, drive home, fast. I have my hands in the air conditioner. I have my head out the window like my dog. We get home, and about 45 minutes after I had started eating this taco, I finally start to feel relief. I mean, I tried everything, yogurt, bread, bananas, milk, nothing took it away. But after 45 minutes or an hour, I finally started to feel relief. And all those prayers that I was telling God, I'll never eat a zombie taco again. Oh, he does answer prayers. Until 2 hours later, it made its exit the same way it went down for about 2 hours straight. Now, Tony wanted me to add this into the story, so hang on. It's not there yet. So I was repeating those same vows to God about 2 hours after that because it had to make an exit somewhere else. So for about 3 hours, this was through midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, I was praying, and God was answering prayers throughout the night. End of the story, I lost 6 pounds that night, and vocabulary I never had before, and pain that I've never felt before, and places I never knew that existed, burning everywhere, nose, nostril, throat, mouth, everywhere. I was tapping out. I now know what it means to tap out. You know, there was subtle hints that I should have tapped out throughout the day, you know, Japanese, Mexican, Korean owner, Chinese food. But I didn't heed those warnings. I didn't tap out, but I was tapping out at least 20 times throughout that night. And a little, I guess, sweet to my sour of my spicy story is since then I haven't had acid reflux. So if I ever get it back, I'll tell my wife, let's go back and have a zombie taco. Know when to tap out, guys.
You heard that at church. So good. We actually have something to show you.
Do it. Maybe 5 minutes.
Just
that's how much is left. Tortilla's almost gone, but there's a lot of filling left. And just needing a drink. He's a braver man than I am today.
You can hear Silvino in the background, can't you? Oh, that's such a good story. Thank you, Steve. How many of you have ever had those moments where someone has told you wisdom, they've warned you about something, and you said this, I know better. I know better. You ignored the warning signs, and you said, it's not a big deal. And then at some point, you were faced with a zombie taco, and now you're in a cold sweat, and you're not sure what is next. Anyone ever have those moments? Because Israel did. The writer Isaiah, who's writing for the king at that time, sending this message out for the people, he says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe to those who don't listen to the warnings and the wisdom that God has given. Woe to those people. They learn the hard way. And yet, here's the interesting thing about Israel. Even though Israel continues to go and not listen to that wisdom and not listen to those warning signs, Israel experiences beautiful moments of sweet, even though they went the wrong direction. How many of you have ever experienced that? You made a really boneheaded decision. You knew it was probably a bad one. And yet, in the end, somehow, things worked out. You survived the zombie taco. Things worked out and you experienced sweet. Our next presenter is going to share a moment, an experience she had as a mother. And being a parent, you know this. Sweet and sour is a pretty good description of parenting. So she's going to share some of the sour, but how that led to something really sweet. So please give a big hand for Rose Ricinho.
Wow, I'm like on the opposite of that spectrum. Good morning. Let's see, sweet and sour. Bittersweet. So you realize that mothers, they experience the bad, the good, and so much ugly through their lifetime. It's really rough for sometimes for mothers, and I've experienced one of those rough edges stories. And I can't believe I'm up here. I've done this before, but this is going to be different. This is going to be the short end of a lifetime story because it's changed our lives so much. And so it begins with this phone call that you think everybody else gets but yourself. And the day starts out, there was so much going on before this point, but it's that phone call that makes that sour part of your life change. And so the phone call came, and it went from one person who couldn't take the call, and you saw the sadness on his face. He moved the phone to somebody else, and that person took the phone, tried to take the message, passed the phone on because it was just too much. And the one person that took the phone call, took the message down, took everything we needed, hung up and said, we found Alex. Let's go. We'll drive because I know you can't. And so we get in the car, and she says, oh, where'd he go? What happened? This is the child that calls every day. He tells us when he's at, where he's at. I'm going to be late, but not today. And so then we ask, where is he? And she says, he's at the USC hospital. And I'm thinking, the campus, oh, this is great. He's in a good place. But at the same time, I was angry because this child, all I can do is see him sitting up there getting ready to apologize for crashing his car. And so we drive on, and I notice this way that we're going. And it looks really familiar. That 5 freeway that we pass all the time to go to Universal Studio, wherever it is we're going, that 5 freeway looks really familiar. And as I used to point, hey, that was the hospital I was born in. And many, many of you know that hospital. You've seen it on General Hospital. And now it's new. But at that time, that Gothic-looking hospital is what we were driving towards. And I'm going, oh, no, not this place. We've got to find another way to get him out there, maybe get him to Loma Linda, not this place. And so as we go on and we go walking up the stairs and there's homeless all over the place, there's dirt and there's papers, and I'm going, God, we got to move this boy out of this hospital. And so my feelings change to fear. And as we walk through, you can see the dreary and eerie place that this was, because it was old. This place was built in 1866. Even though I was born in there maybe 30 years ago. 40 years ago? Let's just go with that. He was bringing back to this place that I had never seen before, except from the freeway. And as we walked through, you can see the elevator that we had to go through, the hallway, that there were these men on gurneys, and they were handcuffed to their gurneys. And we were not allowed to go there because they were going up to the prison ward. Why am I at this place? And so we go up through this elevator, and this elevator that shook and seemed like it was just going to fall any minute. And I'm thinking, oh, God, why are we here? And so when it opened, we jumped out. We didn't just walk out. We jumped out. And it didn't get better because the hallway was gray and old and sorry looking until we walked through the ICU, all new. And as we walked through the ICU, we were just really afraid. There he was, laying with all these tubes coming out of him. What are we going to do now? And as I looked from him to his father, and I just saw this really disbelief on his face as the tears rolled down his eyes. You see, this is his baby son. He's 21, but this was the son. And so I looked back, and I said, God, you must have a great miracle going on, because I've got nothing. I can't help this boy. In all the years that I've been a mom, 2 kids before him, I had nothing. And so I turned around, and now this, at this point, the doctor had come in and just said, I'm really sorry. With his entourage of residents, I don't think he can make it through the week. And here's an educated man. I don't care how many years of experience. He's making an educated guess. And I looked at him. I said, what about hope? And he looked at me with his arrogant self and just said, I hope the best for your family. You know what? I got news for him. And I go, you know what? We're going to go with hope. And with that, he walked out with his entourage. And I looked and I looked at him, and there was a tear rolling down his face. And that's when I said, Alex, we're not leaving here without you. And I said, God, you know, it's your will. It's not mine. This is your son. This was just a gift to me. And if today I have to say goodbye, I'm going to say goodbye. And with that, I felt comfort. All that hopelessness, the fear, gone. I was comforted. I felt strength. It was a feeling that until now, I can describe over and over. But it's through that sweetness. Through that sweetness where at one time it was bitter. The call was bitter. The hospital was bitter. Therapy was bitter. And through all the angry, all the depression, all the frustration, there was still sweet. Because the sweet came and he enabled me to step out of this circle of craziness, to stand back and enable me to look through his eyes, his love. As I sat in church or with a group or even with a stranger, I was able to watch them listen to Alex's story. And it's a story that Alex couldn't even remember. He only knew the story because of us. Through that, it, it was all that sweetness. It's through God that gave us the chance, gave me the chance to look through his eyes. And through Alex's story, it wasn't about this, how proud I was of him telling the story and being just happy to see him do this. It was experiencing the sweet. The sweet part where God had able him to come and tell his story. He didn't have to remember it, but he knew that he was one of God's many miracles. Bittersweet.
Wasn't that powerful? How many of you have ever had Alex tell you his story? It's beautiful. If you get a chance sometime, ask Alex to share his story with you. It's a powerful, powerful story. And I've been one of those many people too who've been able to watch as Alex will meet a stranger. And he'll just start sharing his story. Like they've been friends forever. And he'll hug the guy or the girl and say, "Thanks so much for listening to my story. I am a living, walking miracle. And I love hearing your story, Alex." Rose, thank you so much for sharing that sweet and sour. And that's what life is, isn't it? It's filled with sweet and sour moments. And oftentimes we get nervous when these things happen. And yes, they're painful and often terrible. But we can't simply just run from it and ignore it, can we? There's a friend of mine. He's in jail right now. He ignored the warnings. He ignored the wisdom that was all around him. And now he's there in jail. And I get to go visit him every once in a while. I've been trying to make weekly visits just to see how he's doing. And he is going to get out of prison in about 3 months. And so I showed up this week to visit him. When I got there, he looked really down, really discouraged. And I said to my friend, "Hey, how you doing?" And he said, "I am exhausted. I'm feeling hopeless. I'm feeling frustrated. I feel like there is just no hope." And so I sat there and just listened to him tell his story a little bit more. And then he said, "I feel like I'm in the desert," he said. And I asked him, "Do you know about the desert? Do you know what the desert stands for Israel?" He said, "I don't know." I said, "The desert is the place where they unlearned and learned certain things. The desert's where they re-navigated everything and started to learn to seed life differently so they could walk in the new." I said, "What will you do right now while you are in the desert? You've got 3 months left in this place. What will you do with your time?" My friend looked at me, and there was a change on his face. He said, "I am going to be the man that my mom wants me to be. I'm going to allow the desert to help change me so that when I walk in freedom, I stay there." So powerful. And that's what you and I are called to do in these different seasons. Now, for the Hebrews, they had different seasons. They had things called feast days. For us, we have like one or two feast days. Thanksgiving. That's where we get really bloated and get a lot of tryptophan. Thank you. Good. Yeah, we get loaded with that and we fall asleep for days. We're in a coma. Faux turkey or turkey coma. For them, and by the way, then we'll watch football, right? Beautiful. For them, though, they had these holidays that they remembered the ebb and the flow of life, that life is not just all happy, but it's filled with lots of different experiences. And so they had these different feast days. And they start with Passover. And at Passover, what you did is you remembered that moment. You were in jail. You were enslaved. It was painful. It was bitter. And you remember that moment. And in that moment, though, you remember that even though I'm experiencing this thing, there's still new life to be had. And I don't know how many of you are in this place right now. You're in this place where it just feels like, I don't know if there's any hope beyond this. I can't see through it. The message of Passover is that there is life just waiting to burst forth outside of this. Hold on a little bit longer. After Passover, they would have unleavened bread. In an unleavened bread ceremony, this is what they would do. Unleavened bread was like this. It was like you're putting on the backpack and you're about to leave Egypt. But the question they would ask is this: what goes in the backpack? What stays? What goes? How many of you have ever had to make a life decision, a change, and you had to ask yourself, what stays? What goes? Are there certain cycles, certain habits that need to stay there? Are there certain new tools that you need to pick up and start carrying with you? What stays? What goes? They left the leaven behind. If that's your moment, if this is the season you're in, be very careful what you put in your pack and what you decide to leave. First fruits was a really beautiful moment. It's when you got the backpack on, and they would celebrate this as a community. They would celebrate the movement with that new pack. How many of you have ever tried to walk in something new? You got a new job, and you're thinking, I have no idea how to do this job. And you're kind of faking it till you make it. You do the new thing. Some of you graduated, and now you're about to walk into the new thing, and you're terrified. And here's what college is going to look like for you the first couple weeks. You're going to crawl. And some of you are going to stumble and fumble. And that's okay. You're not going to do it perfect at the beginning. But the beauty of first fruits is that as you stumble, as you crawl, you get stronger. And you start to be able to stand up. And you're kind of slow at first. But then you start to move. And you start to walk. And you begin to feel a little, yeah. Pointing to people on campus. And then all of a sudden you're running and you got this mojo about you. And you're beginning to see life all around you, the first fruits. It's not full yet, but it's little pieces of life. And that's what happens when you begin to walk and jog and run in the new. Life begins to form all around you. And so the Hebrews would come together and they would celebrate the first fruits. How many of you in your moments of pain and brokenness, someone sent you a card? Or a phone call. And just that little moment, it changed something for you. It wasn't huge. It was a tiny reminder that there is life fully on its way. Weeks was a celebration where you learned to, once you moved into the fullness, you enjoyed the banquet. How many of you like to eat? Yeah. This is Sabbath potluck, but I'm talking really good food potluck. Grandma's roast is not brought to the table. That special K loaf that you wish had never been invented, that's not there. There's some other really yummy stuff there, and it's a feast. And sometimes in life, you get to these places and you enjoy the fullness. And by the way, when you're in that season, the worst thing you can do is worry about what the next one looks like or look back at the past. Some of you are in these really beautiful seasons right now. And all you can think about is getting on to the next thing. Some of you have families. You have small children. And you should be enjoying this season. Even though it's crazy and chaotic, hectic, you should be fully present to that because that won't last forever. Some of you, you've moved on to retirement. Praise the Lord, you got through it. Enjoy it. Whatever season you're in, learn to be fully present in it. Trumpets. Was now when you would say, I can now look back and say, I am thankful for all the moments. Does anyone know how to play trumpet in this room? Okay. I imagine if someone were to give me a trumpet and say, blow the trumpet, it would sound like this. It would be terrible. It wouldn't sound quite right. And you'd try to blow the trumpet, and by yourself, it sounds kind of weak. But what you'll notice about this trumpets is that everyone in community has one. Ever show up to church and your voice sounds like mine and you start singing? And you're praying no one else hears that note that's not quite right that you just can't hit, but you're going to sing it loud anyways because Nathan is calling you to. Praise the Lord! And you're just singing it out. But the beauty of trumpets is that when you begin to share your stories, share the song, you're not alone because other people are doing it as well. And before you know it, your trumpet, your voice becomes part of the whole. And all you hear is the choir, the band. And that's what would happen at trumpets. Atonements, you would look back and you would say, look at all of these things that happened in the past. I resolve to never go back there again. And you would end your celebrations that year with tabernacles. And here's the beauty of tabernacles. Once all of this is shared, once you've done the interior work, you come together in community. And in community, we learn to celebrate and share our stories. You have stories, don't you? You have stories that need to be told. And in tabernacles, you would come together in rooms like this. And then oftentimes just in rooms, living rooms, you would come together. And you would start sharing those victory moments. You'd talk about the defeats that led into the sweet moments. And so today for the service, for our hot and spicy, sweet and sour, we wanted to remind all of you that whatever season you're in, there is hope. And there is life just around the corner. And so if you're in a season where things are good and you've hit your groove and you're feeling like life is just full and you're eating fruits from everywhere, then your job is to share that with others and bring them along. If you've got plenty, then share it with others. If others are hurting and need to be lifted up, lift them up, because right now you are strong. But if you are a person right now who is suffering in the sour, in the bitter, the pain, then our message to you is this, much like Rose, much like Steve's story today, that even though you're burning up and your tears are coming down and you're having to watch as family and friends are hurting and it hurts you too, know that life is just around the corner. Hold on a little bit longer. Because in community, we find new life. In community is where God will continue to bless and raise up a people, not by their strength, but by His. And when we become united in that, we become strong people who lift each other up through our stories. So may God bless you today. And our challenge to you is share your stories today of sweet and sour, hot and spicy. Share those stories and watch as the kingdom unfolds before you. Blessings today.